This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Two guests who've been with us a few times before, Susan East Nelson, the former communications director for the Democratic Party, now a prominent lawyer, and her friend, the Republican political consultant Scott Wilfong, who's been doing his thing now since the year of 1998. I remember when he was escorting Jim Donilon here, there, and everywhere when Jim Donilon was challenging John Breaux, and now he has a candidate opposing Jim Donilon. We might actually get to that as we move along, but there is much to discuss with these two well-informed people. And we need to start with the death of Kathleen Blanco, who will lie in state Thursday at the Capitol, Louisiana's only female governor. You knew her, Susan. What did you think?
She was an amazing leader for the state of Louisiana. And, you know, she really had at her heart the welfare of children and families. And so, you know, it's very much we are poorer that she has left our midst today. But certainly we are richer for the time that she spent serving us as a leader.
And not every governor gets this honor, but she has received it as a one-term governor. I was commenting that if Bobby Jindal, he probably has, let's hope, many years left. He's only 48 years old, but if he were to die, I'm not sure he would get the same honor. And he was a two-term governor, Scott Wilfong. There's a reverence for Kathleen Blanco that goes beyond anything that happened in her one term in office, and we know it was an eventful term.
Yeah, and don't forget, she had a much longer elected history than Jindal did, or even like somebody like Mike Foster, who basically served, what, one term in the Senate and then became governor. I mean, she was a state rep for, I think, at least two terms. She was a public service commissioner. She was lieutenant governor for 8 years. I don't know what the sum total is, but I'm guessing it was close to 20 years or more.
24
in elected office. So, you know, that probably goes into it as much as anything. It's not just her time as governor. It's the service to the state over a long period of time.
And she never lost an election. She entered the governor's race once and withdrew, as John Kennedy did once. And Kennedy, of course, lost several other elections, but Kathleen Blanco never lost one of them.
She was the beneficiary of Buddy Leach.
Buddy Leach?
I think Richard Iu would have been governor that year had it not been for Buddy Leach.
I think she would even acknowledge that. And as I look back at 2003, the race that Scott is referencing, Bobby Jindal in the primary received 443,000 votes. Kathleen Blanco received 250, Richard Iyube 224, and Buddy Leach 187. Mm-hmm. So Buddy Leach was peeling votes off Richard Iyube, and Iyube quite likely would have defeated Bobby Jindal in a runoff. But she came from behind. She was behind 183,000 votes in the primary and then won by almost 55,000 votes. Jindal was the favorite. What happened? Why did Kathleen Blanco win, Susan?
Well, you know, the bellwether of Louisiana is Lake Charles and Acadiana, and she was really, really strong in those two areas. And I think the word spread from the western part of the state that she was the best candidate.
I think she actually lost in her home parish.
She may have lost, but in Lake Charles, she
was closer, just like John Bell lost in Livingston Parish.
Yeah.
But instead of losing as Hillary Clinton did, 85-15, he lost like 55-45. It was close to David Bruce Vitter. And sometimes the margins make the difference. But there was talk that race might have been a factor. And that's an unfortunate element in all of politics. And in this case, Bobby Jindal is obviously an ethnic person. And in North Louisiana, a lot of parishes, which had gone strong for David Duke, did not go as strong for him. Scott, you're from Lincoln Parish.
That's right. I remember that well. I mean, it seems forever. But in 2003, I had not even yet been elected to the State Central Committee. And I've served almost 16 years now on that. So 2003, it's easy to look back and say, wow, how did that happen? But 2003, we had never elected a Republican senator. David Vitter had not won that election yet.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We had, I think, no statewide officials. Maybe Fox McKithen was the only, still alive. You know,
sure, yeah.
I mean, insurance commissioner, lieutenant, everybody was a Democrat. Yeah. So, it seems, for people like us, it seems like just yesterday, but really it was quite a while ago. And George Bush was in his first term. In the presidency. So totally different world. But yeah, my area, the state, Lincoln Parish and all, they didn't really know this Jindal guy. You know, he was a little different looking, talked a little different. And, it took him losing that race really to win the next.
Very good politician.
Hopefully that's the only place David
wanted to be. But in 2005, Scott, you mentioned after the death of Walter Fox McKithen on July 16th, the seven statewide elected officials in August when Katrina hit were Kathleen Blanco, Mitch Landrieu, Charlie Foti, Robert Woolley, Al Ader, Bob Odom, John Kennedy, all Democrats at the time.
At the time.
Kennedy has since moved on, but he was a liberal Democrat then, as we know, and he did not run for governor of Louisiana. And if he had, he might very well be the favorite. But right now, John Bel Edwards is the solid favorite. And Scott Wilfong, is there enough inertia for the Republicans to force a runoff and clip John Bel Edwards on November 16th, or is this a lost cause?
No, it's not a lost cause. I think, I've said on the show before, you know, I personally would vote for Ralph Abraham. I like Ralph. I know him more than I know Eddie. But I tend to think that Eddie is probably the only candidate that, if there is a runoff, you know, on October 13th, Eddie Rasponi has the ability to write a number with six zeros behind it and immediately go. Ralph Abraham is going to have to start from zero. He's going to start making calls. It's going to take 5 days to get any checks in. I hate to say that, but I think if a runoff is forced, yeah, I think Eddie Rasponi is the one who can and might win in that runoff. But I think the advantage right now may be with the governor. I don't know. I haven't seen. I'm waiting for a poll. So,
Susan, do you
like
Britain?
I think that's interesting because the fact that Rasponi hasn't shown up at any of the forums, you know, he dissed the sheriffs, he dissed the LMA, he dissed lobby, and basically said he wasn't going to any of that. I think there's a lot of people who that may have turned off.
Well, he's playing for the runoff. I mean, I think that's his goal is just to get ahead of Abraham and finish second and hope that John Bell doesn't get 50%.
But there's no guarantee there will be a runoff. I know that John Bell was at a fundraiser last night at the home of Chris Kirkpatrick, and I heard it was like a celebratory event, like, congratulations, Governor. He thinks he can feel it. He thinks he's going to win re-election, and some people say for good reason.
Well, I think it's there's some reason for cautious optimism. October 12th, there's two home games here in Baton Rouge. You have LSU versus Florida, which is homecoming. And then Southern is playing at home that night. And so I think if we don't get early vote turnout in the Baton Rouge area, that the numbers may be very different.
You know, but again, I think the other side to that, though, is that you have a thing called St. George that's going to be
true.
On that ballot.
That's true.
And those folks are not going to let even an LSU. Is it LSU Florida?
It's LSU Florida.
They're not even going to let LSU Florida get in the way of
that. Only St. George that will be voting.
That's about, 80,000 mostly white upper class conservatives?
That could help.
You know, now the key for those two governor candidates is who can get more of them. You know, if Eddie Rasponi is, you know, ostensibly he's more popular in Baton Rouge, that might be his key to making the runoff.
I saw a lot of Rasponi yard signs in Shenandoah.
They are popping up.
Right next to the St. George sign.
East Baton Rouge Parish has gone for Barack Obama twice, Hillary Clinton for Foster Campbell. Go down the line. It is a Democratic stronghold in these statewide races. Mm-hmm. And yet the city has enough people with its parish population to have a congressional district all its own. Just Baton Rouge. But yet somehow, some way, the congressman for Baton Rouge does not have North Baton Rouge in his district. Scott, why is that the case?
It's a good question for the next legislature who will be redrawing the districts.
2021.
You know, and I've already had conversations with some House and Senate members about asking them if they would consider trying to get that position, asking the new speaker or the new Senate president for that committee chairmanship. Because, you know, especially if we aren't able to win the governorship, the Republicans have got to have a strong presence at the Capitol when that comes along, when those bills come along to redistrict.
And this is where I think I disagree. I think we need to take it out of the hands of the legislature completely and have it done. But I mean, why are you allowing people to draw their own districts in their own self-interest? I mean, there are people I know right now who are running specifically so that they can draw a district that's favorable to them
but
in 2021.
I'll tell you why, because I like to be able to pick up the phone and call Dan Clater and Paula Davis and say, hey, guy. Now Dan won't be there, but Paula will be. You know, and say this is what you need to do.
I think then
if they don't represent
really,
me, yeah, they don't have they
that
don't have
really
any.
Underscores the reason for an independent commission to do the redistricting.
And I would imagine Congressman Graves, and if I were in his position, I'd do exactly the same thing. He's calling these lawmakers.
Absolutely,
and saying, I don't want North Baton Rouge in my district because that means I'm a former congressman. This is the difference between victory and defeat.
Well, you have to remember though, even though Baton Rouge is big and powerful on its own. The other areas of the state are more powerful collectively, and places like St. Bernard want Steve Scalise to represent them and not
Cedric Richmond.
You know, so, you know, when you combine all of those, that's why it happens. And then, you know, when the sitting Congress member from Baton Rouge is like, hey, I'm fine with this. I like this district. You know, that's what you get.
877-217-5757 is your number. We'll go to the phone line shortly. And you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Democrat Susan East Nelson, law professor and practices law in three different states, former Democratic political operative in our state, and Scott Wilfong, longtime member of the State Central Committee, 16 years, had a major position in the GOP until recently, but he's still in the game as a consultant. We're back. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. We're covering some ground politically, nationally, and in the state with Susan Nelson and with Scott Wilfong. And a big issue in the last month, and really almost every month in our country, guns. These two tragedies in El Paso and in Dayton have showcased this issue. And none other than the New York Times and its pages on Saturday, its editorial page, says in a newspaper editorial, it's too late to ban assault weapons. The New York Times says, perhaps if gun control advocates frankly acknowledge that military-style rifles are going to present in American society for many generations, going to be present, it will help assuage fears of mass confiscation and give gun owners the space they need to support sensible safeguards that will save lives. The guns, even those that make mass murders more deadly, are here to stay. Susan, your response.
You know, as soon as we decided that the rights of people to own AR-15s were more important than the lives of children, I think to a certain extent we were right in that argument. And I'm a gun owner, so I'm not here to take away people's guns and or anything like that. But there is just absolutely no reason to own a type of military-style weapon. And you'll have military veterans tell you that. You'll have General Ottery tell you that. You'll have every expert say these are not the kind of weapons that should be available on the streets.
Scott, what do you think? Should we talk about background checks? If the Democrats are willing to give on assault weapons, would background checks be something that Republicans would be willing to give on?
Well, first of all, I love how, you know, the liberals will always throw out this absurd number of mass shootings, like 250 mass shootings, which they're counting suicides, they're counting gang violence.
They're counting multiple deaths.
And a lot of them are criminal acts, too. They're calling those mass shootings involved in the commission of a crime other than just innocent people being shot. Nonetheless, out of those 250, even if you accept that, something like less than 2% are done with a, quote, AR-15s, which stands for Armalite rifle, not assault rifle, but a, quote, black rifle. Almost none of these mass shootings. Now, the last two were exceptions, and yes, they're in the media right now. But most mass shootings are handguns. Most people are killed with handguns, and somehow we've created this big narrative about
Parkland,
AR-15.
Yeah, Parkland, Newtown, Columbine. Go down the list. They were
right?
assault weapons. Las Vegas,
Florida, the nightclub in Florida.
If you want to accept the 250, okay, but you've named about six. And there's like 250
that
you're claiming.
Many others.
So
no,
all I'm
but
saying,
why do you need those weapons, Scott?
Well, why did the, you know, people at the founding of this nation need the same weapons that the soldiers fought with? By the way, that's what farmers and you know the militia had.
Because there
the
were
same.
Only like three kinds of guns back then.
Well, you know,
I mean,
my point
it.
Is the type of rifle doesn't matter. Would you rather be shot by a 9mm and killed or an AR-15?
Well,
the
New York Times is basically agreeing with you, Scott, saying we'll give you this. Just give us some other things.
Okay, fine.
What about background checks? What do you think about
that? Tell me which one of these mass shootings would have been prevented by a background check. Which one of these people did not pass a background check?
Sandy Hook. I mean, the guy had mental health issues.
His mother bought a rifle and got a background check and gave it to him.
She didn't give it to
him. Now, in Nevada, Louisiana, by the way, number one in the nation in murders per capita for 30 years in running. And number one with a bullet. And way ahead of any other state. Mm. Way ahead. And it's not talked about by our congressional delegation for good reason. But 1996, Nevada was number two to Louisiana. Nevada is now, in the last FBI report, 44th. And they did background checks, and they did the red flags. And those were not egregious measures. But we keep hearing about how Washington has the strictest gun laws, and Washington, D.C. per capita has a higher murder rate than does Louisiana. But Nevada does these common sense measures, and they have reduced their rate tremendously.
And you think that background checks will stop criminals from murdering people?
In some cases.
So in New Orleans, when someone wants to go commit a gang hit, the first thing they're going to do is run down to Academy and pass a background check to get that 9mm.
Criminals aren't walking into Sandy Hook, and they aren't walking into Parkland. They weren't criminals until they started firing on the crowd of people.
Okay, but all these things you're citing were people who passed background checks.
877-217-5757. That's 877-217-5757. Your Talk Louisiana number. David in Atlanta. Hi, David. You're on with Scott and Susan.
Good morning. Actually, Mr. Wolfong has a point about handguns. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, if you are licensed to carry a concealed weapon, as in a handgun, you are 66% more likely to be involved in a crime using a weapon. And a better background check would have prevented the man who shot Congressman Scalise from purchasing a firearm because he had a history of domestic violence. Now, my question for Mr. Wolfong is, last week, President Trump held a rally in New Hampshire, and he said that the country was bleeding jobs when he took office, and vote for me to protect your 401k, when in fact President Obama created more jobs at this point in office, and furthermore, President Obama had a better stock market than at this point in office for President Trump. So, Mr. Wolfong, what is it do you like about being played by the con man, the dean of Trump University? You're being played as if you were a marionette when you support this man who's nothing more than a thief, a lie, and a con man. How do you carry such shame? And what about the stain Trump has put on the Republican Party?
Wow, there's a lot there, David. I do appreciate the agreement. And actually, I will go back to your earlier point. One thing I agree with him about is when he said the tougher background checks. Now, if you want to talk about strengthening background checks, absolutely. The NRA is backing that. Of course.
In what way?
That we need a deeper – we need to be able to share information. These agencies need to be able to understand that someone
why should there be no background checks in these private transactions at gun shows and on the internet? Shouldn't they have the same rules as everyone else?
Well, so if I want to loan my shotgun to my cousin so he can go bird hunting on the weekend, I need to go pass a background check?
Well, because that's the type of legislation. If you want to loan your car to your cousin so that he can go driving, he has to have a driver's license. So why not say if you want to be able to carry a gun, you have to have a license?
And if you want to carry my handgun concealed, you need a concealed handgun permit. But why should I have to pass a background check to give my son a gun for his birthday?
Why should you have to pass a driving test to drive a car?
No, you're talking about your rights to do it. I'm saying my right to do with my property what I wish. That's the fundamental difference. And, of course, in the end, it all comes down to, do you want the government to know everybody in America who has a gun? Right. Now, the government would love that.
Now,
of course,
Scott,
they would.
I believe you're a true believer. Scott is sincere. If nothing else, he is sincere. But I'm not so sure about Senator William Morgan Cassidy, a doctor. If there isn't a health issue in America, I don't know what is a bigger one than people dying of homicide. More people have died of homicides in the U.S. in the last 15 years than all the wars put together in the history of the country going back to the Revolutionary War. But Senator Cassidy has taken a couple $1 million from the gun lobby, and sometimes money talks. I think even you would acknowledge that, mm-hmm. Scott. So if he's sitting on the fence, you dance with who brung you, and the gun lobby put him in office. So is it hard for a politician who may even disagree to go against the people who are responsible for him being in office?
No, I won't. I won't differ. I'm cynical, like anybody that's been in this business as long as I have. That money does talk, but Bill Cassidy does not need the gun lobby to tell him how to vote. It's the people of Louisiana will tell him how to vote. When we had the Second Amendment to our Constitution about 10 years ago, I think it passed with 83%. Bill Cassidy is not listening to the NRA. He's listening to people like me and constituents across Louisiana that say, leave us alone with guns.
Well, that's good, because I'm pretty sure Senator Cassidy doesn't speak Russian. So, you know, when he needs to listen to the NRA.
Excuse me, I've got to buy some Facebook time.
Annapolis. Hello, Paul. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning. Changing the subject somewhat, the raids that happened in Mississippi picked up a lot of illegal aliens. They broke the law. Yes, they did. Some did, some didn't. Was a fine or is a fine being levied against the owners of the farm or the processing plant? And I think the processing plant was owned by Koch Brothers. I could be wrong, Koch Industries.
Susan?
It's my information that the ICE is not enforcing the penalties against the companies, and this actually isn't much of a change from the Obama administration, where they did the same type of raids. However, the amount of fines and the amount of enforcement in the fines has gone down significantly in the Trump administration. Everyone's fine with illegal immigrants until, you know, they come in and raid and take your business, and then they're like, "Well, look the other way." And I mean, you know, there's an impact on business, and that's why, excuse me, we didn't really talk about immigration in 2001 because we had a big problem with employment and we needed people to work. And, you know, now it's become this social issue. And
yeah, it's ironic how far we've come from Bill Clinton's State of the Union address, where he declared the biggest problem facing America as illegal immigration, to today, presidential candidates running on open borders.
877-217-5757, your number. Back after this pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. J.C. Kane is producing today, and on the left, Susan Nelson. On the right, Scott Wilfong. And if you'd like to join the conversation, your number is 877-217-5757. You can email us, talk@talklouisiana.org. And Tracy at the Capitol, Scott Wilfong, notes that Bill Cassidy was elected to Congress in 2008. And he did so when his political consultant, George Kennedy, collaborating with Lane Grigsby, got Michael Jackson in that race. The final tally, and a plurality won, by the way. The final tally was Cassidy 48, the incumbent Don Cashew, a Democrat 40, and Michael Jackson, a Democrat running as an independent, 12. So Cassidy won that race as a result of gaming the system legally. Nothing wrong with that. And Tracy asks, why didn't the Republicans do the same thing in the governor's election this year? Why did they not go out and find a Democrat to run along with Ralph Abraham and Eddie Rasponi?
Well, you have to remember, when Cassidy won, that was a closed primary deal, and Cassidy actually won that election with 49% of the vote. 48, yeah. You didn't have to get a majority. The open primary system is what's killing us. I mean, the Republican Party has begged the legislature and some of our closest friends that just continue to refuse to give us closed primaries, and this is what you get. You know, we can't. You know, I've heard a lot of people compare, like, Rasponi's campaign to some of these other governors' elections around the country, and I'm like, there's a big difference. You're all running on the same ballot. And that's, you know, if John Bel Edwards gets 51% in the primary, you know, oh, well. Good job, guys.
Well, I think we're only second to Maine, where they do the ranked voting, mm-hmm. where you don't even have to have 50%.
Preferential or something, yeah.
It's that weird system. But, you know, I know that friends in other states were shocked that we didn't even know who was going to be in a lot of these races until 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, oh, a lot of them.
And so,
and I, you know, to go back a few months, when I suggested that there were people looking for another candidate in this race back in February,
they came after me with muskets.
But I did say, and I have no idea who. Mm-hmm. I always thought to myself, that line of thinking, say a Republican woman who could take votes from John Bel Edwards would have been an excellent option, because, you know, well, you're looking at who can take votes from the
Democrat
incumbent.
A Democrat would have taken the most votes from him, and he's vulnerable on the choice issue, which most Democrats, even in Louisiana, would not have agreed with a bill with no exceptions for rape or incest. But another listener notes this is analogous to 2004, when David Vitter was running for the U.S. Senate, and the Democrats had John Kennedy, Democrat, Chris John, Democrat, and Arthur Morrell, Democrat, but put no Republican in the race, and Vitter ended up winning without a runoff.
And the story, you know, in Tyler Ridge's book is about how they had the information on Vitter's scandal, but were waiting to use it in the runoff, and guess what?
There was no runoff.
Joey at the Mall of Louisiana. Joey, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, how are y'all doing this morning?
Fine.
I would like to circle back around to Second Amendment issues. And so, firstly, we all know that the modern iteration of, gun control legislation was kind of penned and started by Ronald Reagan after the Panthers marched on the State House in California. And that kind of fits in with what my question is why isn't there more of a note that gun legislation tends to disproportionately affect communities of color?
Well, yeah, a lot of people in the minority community have weapons, no doubt about it. And
Yeah, but a lot of places like Section 8 housing and government installations like that will disarm you if you want to live there.
Well, and there's numerous videos online of black people open carrying and being harassed or downright mm-hmm. assaulted by police. So it's been incredibly inequitable in how we legislate guns and how we enforce those laws against people of color.
Yeah, and I mean, I've been to a number of NRA national conventions, and I think the mainstream media, one, will never show up and actually film the crowd because it is a large percent minority. I would say probably 25 to 30% of the crowd in an NRA convention is in some way minority.
William Anopoulosis. Hello, William. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Jim, I keep hearing nothing but Democrats and Republicans, and the Republican Party say that they're conservative and they stand behind Donald Trump, who I don't see that he practices any of their values. And to me, he has hijacked the Republican Party, and they don't know it. And I think the reason he hijacked it is because they don't really stand for what they say they stand for.
Well, he was a Democrat for much of his life. Donald Trump, a supporter of Hillary Rodham Clinton for many years. Something got into him, Scott, and now he has rock solid support from Republicans.
Yeah, I mean,
why is that the case?
Well, things like defunding that baby-killing organization, Planned Parenthood, that just happened.
Well, he's also been a supporter of Planned Parenthood in his life.
But he
contributed money to Planned Parenthood.
But what have you done for me lately? Since he's been president, he's been nothing but solid on issues like that, and conservatives see that, and yes, that's why they're willing to give him a pass on some of his personal issues, because he walks the walk and talks the talk.
So the Republican Party's new motto is the ends justifies the means. So if it means calling people fat at rallies or just being absolutely abhorrent as a human being.
How can he of all people call somebody fat?
He's not that fat.
He's fat. He's really fat. And, I don't think he can bench press half his weight. It should be a requirement, according to some, that presidents should be able to bench press their weight. I don't think he can do half his weight, Scott.
No, he's a big man and he's strong. But he's backed up everything he said. That's why everything from gun rights to tax policy organizations to family organizations to religious leaders have continued to back it.
Yeah, because they're okay with separating 4-month-old breastfeeding children from their parents,
now,
from
Susan,
their mother.
To be fair, though, Susan, if he had, let's say he were a Democrat. Would Democrats be looking the other way on a lot of this stuff, too, if he were supporting Democrats on all these issues?
No, I don't think so. And I think, it was evidence in the fact that, look what happened to Al Franken. They called him out immediately, and he left his office. So, no, I don't think so.
And now they're regretting they did that.
They may be. But, I mean, considering everyone else around who has done worse, we can look at Jeffrey Epstein if we want to have that conversation.
He was not a U.S. senator.
No, but he was supported by a lot of folks.
Including, two U.S. presidents.
I agree.
And we'll be talking about that with Nick Bryant in a few minutes, but the guy who's been on Epstein's trail for many, many years. Ricky Causey writes, I want a tank and a missile launcher, Scott, and a fully loaded fighter bomber because all of our militia has those weapons. So where do you draw the line on gun regulation, or should there be any line?
We have them right now. Liberals will love to tell you that there's no background checks, there's no laws restricting gun ownership, there's no prosecution of gun criminals. Yes, there are. They just don't enforce them. There's a line called Class 3 weapons. If you want a fully automatic weapon, you have to go to through the proper channels. You have to get permission from your local sheriff or police chief. Obviously, military-grade weapons like grenades,
like
nuclear
weapons. Like the AR-15?
No. That would be go ask a soldier if he wants an AR-15 or if he wants a fully auto M16 when he goes to war.
All right.
He doesn't want an AR-15.
Don Garland writes, the processing plants are not owned by the Koch brothers in Mississippi, but there have been reports that those plants certainly knew they were hiring illegals, and Americans like cheap labor. And
absolutely,
that's why we have the situation we have. It's been a case in which both parties have been culpable on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Donald Trump's golf clubs hired illegal labor and did all sorts of shady things to keep them employed.
Didn't Dianne Feinstein employ a Chinese spy for 25 years? I'm just throwing that out there.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Now, what about, speaking of the Chinese, the president, this is Holly in the Garden District, says that global warming, climate change, is a hoax started by the Chinese. Scott, do you share that viewpoint?
Well, it's an interesting theory. If you could get the United States to restrict its factories and China's not going to, well, then that makes Chinese production even cheaper, doesn't it? It's a good economic.
Are you acknowledging there is climate change?
Is there climate change over decades? Sure, there is. Is it man-made? I doubt it.
Susan?
I mean, we know that there's been global climate change, and the scientists are pretty much universally aligned on that, and most of them are aligned on the fact that there is an element of man in interference in this. But, you know, let's just look at what happened in Lake Michigan just last week, where the plant leaked cyanide into Lake Michigan, mm-hmm. and nobody knew. For 4 days. Mm-hmm. So while people were out boating on Lake Michigan, we're continuing to have these problems when we have reduced EPA enforcement and things like that, where people were literally swimming in cyanide. Mm-hmm.
Before we part, it is curious that Susan and Scott are the best of friends. When Scott turned 40 a few years ago, none other than Susan Nelson threw his birthday party at her house. How can this be? How can this be when you disagree so passionately about these issues that are vital to our future?
I will say this, you know, prior to the Donald Trump election, I really, you know, the content of someone's character has always meant much to me. I'm starting to scratch my head and ask some questions about people who are still on board after all of the things that Donald Trump has done. But I don't think that, you know, our political allegiances define us. I think, you know, everyone is a human and deserves, you know, the respect as a human being.
Well, that was a party for the ages.
That was a lot of fun.
A lot of people mingling of different political stripes.
We did.
I even saw Jeff Hughes there.
Jeff Hughes, yeah. Tony Clayton was there. Yeah, we had some interesting groups. And I remember the day after the Trump election, I attended the Rotary, I believe, and you were the speaker.
Yes.
And I was Susan's guest. And I was all smiles, and you two were a little down,
The year after, or the day after Donald John Trump won the election.
That's right.
Yep, that was 2016.
What will happen? Quickly, 30 seconds. Next year, does Trump win re-election, Susan Nelson?
I don't think so. I think you're going to see more Republican challengers. Some have already started to come out. I think you're going to see the Republican Party return to their actual values and get on board with doing right by the country.
Scott?
I say Trump gets 298 electoral votes.
98, so he wins. Does John Bel Edwards win re-election?
I don't like to call things and jinx them, but I feel like the governor's chances are really good.
Scott?
Not going to say till I see a poll.
he's towing the Republican Central Committee line. Thank you, Scott Wilfong. Thank you, Susan Nelson. Back with Dick Bryant on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster, and we're joined now by Nick Bryant. We heard from him a few weeks ago when Jeffrey Epstein was still alive, perhaps not so well, but in prison, and now we know definitively that he committed suicide. But the story goes on about what he did in his life, and some of the famous people or infamous people who were collaborators. And Nick Bryant, for those who are unaware, was the person who printed the unredacted version of the Black Book of Jeffrey Epstein. And what do you make of the last few weeks, Nick Bryant?
Well, there's considerable anomalies with Jeffrey Epstein's death. He wasn't watched for a couple of hours. He didn't have his cellmate was transferred on Friday. One of the guards wasn't even one of the guards. So we've got anomalies like that in his death that are making people very suspicious.
Well, the New York Times story of Sunday says Epstein was seldom bathing. His hair and beard were unkempt. He was sleeping on the floor of his cell instead of on his bunk bed. He had apparently tried suicide once before. It would seem that he is exactly the kind of guy who should have been watched and should have been watched closely, but he was not. So who dropped the ball?
The Department of Justice and the Bureau of Prisons dropped the ball. And I'm a little skeptical of the Department of Justice at this point. They're letting Ghislaine Maxwell roam free in Los Angeles, and these other women that procured minors for Epstein haven't been indicted. No one's been indicted. If our Department of Justice really wants to get to the bottom of this and find out who these power brokers were that Epstein pandered these underage girls to, all his accomplices should be rounded up and thrown in jail and let them start talking. I mean, this is really as a society, as Americans, we cannot permit this to happen. We cannot permit the death of Jeffrey Epstein to end this investigation. These other procurers have to be brought in, have to be questioned, and we have to find out who these other power brokers were that molested all these children.
Well, it's a story that would have been more compelling had Epstein lived. Do you really think that we're going to get to the bottom of this, that we will know exactly who was traveling with him, who was misbehaving, and who was perhaps acting criminally in the presence of Epstein with his compliance through all these years?
Do I think we're going to get to the bottom of this? We have to get to the bottom of this. We, as a society, we have to get to the bottom of this. We have to find out who was molesting these girls and who molested these girls previously with impunity. If we do not find out about that, if our society is so asleep that it does not want to delve into that, then I really feel sorry for our society. There was a situation in Belgium where a person named Boutreau was connected with a pedophile network, and law enforcement officers actually went on record to say that it had been covered up, and tens of thousands of Belgians took to the streets protesting. America, we need to do that if the Epstein investigation just drops now. I mean, we have to take to the streets. We have to protest. We have to find out who these guys were. We cannot let them molest American children with impunity. We just can't as a society. The toothpaste is out of the tube, and we've got to make sure that the toothpaste stays out of the tube.
It appears, Nick Bryant, that this affects some people potentially on both sides of the political spectrum.
According to the information that I have, yes. Primarily Democrats, but yes, there's some Republicans also. But this isn't, unfortunately, this is not a partisan issue. This is a criminal issue. The partisan politics should play no role in investigating who these other people were that molested these girls. There should absolutely be no partisan politics when it comes to child molestation.
Well, it's a tragic event that went on far too long, and we have talked with you once before, but you have some ideas on how Epstein evaded justice for so long. He did it quite deftly for many years, but ultimately he got his comeuppance. Why was he on the run, if you will, for so long with all of this knowledge about what he had done of a criminal nature?
Well, I wrote a book called The Franklin Scandal, and in that book I showed there were two pedophilic families. Their network was much bigger than Epstein's network, and they were flying kids all around the country. And one of them, like Epstein, had hidden cameras in his Washington, D.C. embassy row house and near embassy row. And he was protected for a very long time because he had helped blackmail people. And this is what people don't understand about Epstein. Epstein was a college dropout from Coney Island. There's no way that he could have compromised rich and powerful people. And the New York Times, New York Magazine, Vanity Fair Magazine have all talked about Epstein and blackmail. But there's no way that a lone college dropout from Coney Island is going to blackmail powerful people. He's obviously going to have to be he was obviously protected. And these powerful men who have access to thugs, murderers, and in some cases even organized crime, they must have realized that Epstein is backed by a very powerful network or organization, or else they just would have had him rubbed out or his legs broken. So it's very obvious to me that Epstein was protected by a very powerful organization.
Now, some say he was a con man from the start. Here's a man who did not have a college degree, and yet he's teaching at a prestigious New York prep school where I'm sure everybody else had a college degree. And curiously, the person who hired Epstein for that post was the father of the current Attorney General of the United States of America, Bill Barr. This story is weird in many contexts, isn't it?
Yes, you get into something like this, and it has a lot of tentacles, like the book I wrote, The Franklin Scandal. And William Barr, who is our Attorney General, is going to have to galvanize the will of the Justice Department to go after these perpetrators that molested all these kids. And if he's not willing to do that, then we need a new Attorney General to, I mean, this is something that can't just die with Jeffrey Epstein, die on the vine. This is something that our society has to really investigate. And as I said earlier, if we're unwilling to do that, to investigate these power brokers that molested these kids with impunity, then I feel very sorry for our society. But I think fundamentally Americans have good hearts and they want justice. And they know that children are the most precious resource that we have, natural resource that we have. So I just have faith in Americans that we're not going to let this happen.
What did you make of the president, Donald Trump, retweeting this claim that the Clintons were somehow involved in the death of Jeffrey Epstein?
Well, the problem with that is there are a lot of things that we need to investigate. And when he says something like that, the media just goes one way, kind of like a school of fish. When we really need to be investigating who these perpetrators were that Epstein was pandering these children to, that's how a statement like that can hurt Americans, because we have to find this out. And if Trump is settling political scores without empirical evidence, then I find that tweet to be highly problematic.
Well, Donald Trump is, of course, a person who knew Jeffrey Epstein well, as did Bill Clinton. How well, in your estimation, and you probably as a journalist know more about this case than anybody, Nick Bryant, how well did Presidents Trump and Clinton know Jeffrey Epstein?
Very, very well. Epstein had like 22 contact numbers for Bill Clinton. And Donald, I have the black book, which you talked about earlier, and Donald Trump's name is circled in the black book. And the house manager who stole Epstein's black book, he circled names that the FBI would later call material witnesses to Epstein's crimes. Donald Trump, and I wrote an article for Gawker where Trump said that he'd never been to Epstein's home, or a spokesman for Trump said that Trump had never been to Epstein's home. But we know that now is a lie. Trump has been to Epstein's home. I would have to say that Trump and Epstein knew each other very, very well. I mean, and you don't have to take my word for it. Just look at Trump's quotes about Epstein over the years. Mm-hmm. Till Epstein got in trouble.
Well, you say we have to get to the bottom of this. And sometimes we do get to the bottom of things, but often they take time. And time has some benefit to people who are in power if they're going to be implicated. They're buying time before their name is unearthed as being culpable in some of this. How long do you think it'll take, Nick Bryant?
Well, that's going to be contingent upon the will of the Department of Justice. And if we see the Department of, as Americans, if we see the Department of Justice dropping the ball on this, then we're going to have to act and prod the Department of Justice to really go after these perpetrators.
Well, we thank you for joining us again, and I'm certain we'll have occasion to call again. Nick Bryant, author of The Franklin Scandal, the man who put the unredacted black book of Jeffrey Epstein on the World Wide Web. It's always good to catch up with you. Thanks for your insights, Nick.
Thanks, Jim.
And as we part company, a reminder that signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Today's the 70th birthday of Robert Plant of Led Zeppelin. In 2008, Rolling Stone ranked him number 15 on its list of the 100 best singers of all time. And in 2011, Rolling Stone readers ranked Plant the greatest of all lead singers. Until tomorrow, for J.C. Kane, this is Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening and stay tuned.